96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. He's young, he's a political newcomer, but he wants to be the next Prince George's County Executive. Democrat Paul Montero jumps into the race that's growing more crowded by the day. He joins me tonight to talk about his candidacy and his plans. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can follow us on Twitter using the hashtag WHURFM. Paul, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Why do you want to do this?
This is home. I'm a native of Prince George's County. This is a place that I started kindergarten in and all the way through high school at the best high school in the county, High Point High School.
Okay, we can debate that, okay. But I'll let that slide for now.
And not being born into privilege, both my parents were young. They were teenagers when they had my sister and I and ultimately three other kids. I was the first in my family to graduate high school because they both dropped out. And my sister, who then and now is the smartest, got pregnant when she was in 10th grade at High Point. And so seeing the way that the public schools invested in me, teachers going out of their way to go the extra mile, to give me opportunities beyond what I saw in my local neighborhood, and being prepared effectively to serve at the highest levels of the federal government, I owe a lot to this place. And I see, especially after having the experience of the last decade, seeing best practices and some worst practices around the country, what other counties are doing, what other cities are doing, what other states are doing on some common challenges, and just simply asking the question, why don't we do that here in Prince George's County? I feel that after the preparation of working 5 years at the White House, 2 years as the head of the Domestic Peace Corps, a program called AmeriCorps Vista, and a year working on community and police relations at the Justice Department, I've been uniquely prepared to serve in this role.
You worked with the Obama administration. How did you get there?
God opened up a door of opportunity. I started working for Senator Obama in 2006, and this is a time where a lot of folks were trying to work for him. And you know how the Hill works. Usually you're only hiring people that are from your state or on the House side, your district. I'm from Prince George's County, Maryland. So the fact that a senator from Illinois hired me to work on his team in the Senate office, it was nothing but God. And that led to, once he announced he was running for president, an opportunity opening up on the campaign staff in Chicago. The headquarters was in Chicago, where I served as the national deputy director for religious outreach. If you remember back to those times, you know, the summer of 2007, a lot of the attack lines around Barack Obama, in addition to he's not black enough, were around his value set. He doesn't share your values. What about the school he went to in Indonesia? What about his church in Chicago? All of these, I think, attack lines trying to delegitimize him. So we had a lot of work over the 18 months working the campaign. But after he won, I went with him to the White House for the first 5 years.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Paul Montero. He wants to be the next Prince George's County executive. He is running in a very, very crowded field. If you have a question or if you have a comment, lines are open again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I mentioned before, this is a very crowded field. Right now, we already have County State's Attorney Angela Alsobrooks. We have Maryland State Senator C. Anthony Muse. There have been discussions about Donna Edwards jumping into the race. All of these are political veterans. How would you strategize to win when you're up against such heavy hitters?
Well, I would simply respond by saying certainly these are people that are well known to some degree across the county because they've served in various levels of government for the last 10 plus years. But being known isn't so much being supported. And so while people may know these names, they may know that folks have been serving in the Congress or the state Senate or the state's attorney's office. I'm simply offering another alternative to the voters of the county. When I look at especially the numbers of people that even participate in our elections, it's sad to see that in the most affluent black majority county in the country, for these elections, for local offices, you're usually around 20%. 20%. So literally, most people in the county are not exercising that precious right. So the people that are in offices, that have been in offices for many years, I respect public service for sure. They're being elected off of 20% of the county. And I will spend the next 9 months, 10 months talking to 100% of the county and offering people a credible alternative. If they're happy and satisfied with the way things are going in the county, there's a lot to celebrate, and they think this is the best we can do. Maybe they would like to go with an established candidate that's been around for a long time. But in talking to folks and growing up here and, in fifth grade, seeing some of the same issues that the county's still dealing with the public schools, I believe sincerely that people are looking for a different choice. It is not a regular time, because in a regular time where you didn't have an attorney general bringing back the war on drugs, where you didn't have a president, intentionally instilling fear in entire communities, maybe it would be time for the next person in line or one of the heavyweights to take the job. But there is a hunger for something different. And going back to, the fact that I'm the only person running that can say I'm a graduate of the county's public schools. I think that's saying something. We can all talk about schools, and everyone certainly does. I'm speaking from experience, having been a student in the public school system, having gone to college in the county, and having seen other approaches around the country, and looking at how we can poach the best practices that that we can apply here to give more opportunity to all students, not just the ones going to college.
Okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Paul Montero. He is a candidate for Prince George's County Executive seat. Of course, that's being vacated by Rushorn Baker, who is under term limits, and he is running for governor of the state of Maryland. How old are you, Paul?
37.
You're 37. You're the youngest of of the candidates. Arguably, let's say if you won, you'd be the youngest by our research, the youngest county executive ever. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think it helps? Do you think some people who have a little snow on the roof may give you the side eye and say, "Come on now, why not run for a city council seat or a county council seat, or get a little experience under your coat, before you, run for the big job?"
Sure, it's a fair question, and certainly when I was at the White House and people would show up to meet with me, whatever they expected the person at the White House to look like, it wasn't me. And I, the look on people's faces when they see a relatively young person sitting in a seat that they think someone with some
snow on
the roof might or should occupy. But at the end of the day, I truly believe that people value individuals for what they bring to the table, whether it's because my age or what I look like. I think people will look past those things and see what am I talking about? Are my ideas mature? Yes, I'm the youngest person running, but I'm old enough for sure because in terms of experience, and I wouldn't put an age limit on, at what point are you, quote unquote, ready to take this job? Because County Executive Baker, said as much as the first 6 months of his first term, Wayne Curry's living in his office, helping him, get a handle on the job. There's nothing wrong with, sort of figuring out the best and brightest that you can learn from in approaching any challenge. And I certainly would look to approach the job in a collaborative way. My experience, though, what I would also respond with, though, is I'm the only person running that's run two federal programs, one with almost $100 million budget. I've run a federal program with offices around the country dealing with some very tough issues of economic development, community police relations, racial tension. And so, again, going back to what this county invested in me and prepared me to do, I've just had the experience that is uniquely relevant to what the county is going through right now.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carlos calling from Silver Spring. Carlos, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I'm actually a graduate from High Point myself.
Okay.
Go so Eagles.
It is one of the best schools in Prince George's County.
Thank you, Carlos.
And I had a question pretty much. What are your thoughts on a school such as High Point, who is overpopulated, and the fact that even, you know, when I was there a couple of years back, it was already a school filled with students, and now I'm sure it's 10 times worse. What are your thoughts or what are your plans on that type of stuff?
And can I ask you a quick question, Carlos? When did you graduate?
2004.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks for the question. And High Point, I think, is a good example of what's happened in the county. I mean, it's named after, it's placed on the highest point in Prince George's County. It's now one of, by a lot of measures, one of the four worst or sort of most underperforming schools in the county. County Executive Baker submitted a budget that had a special line item for schools in that category. It was built in 1954. Even when I was there, I came out in 1998, it was this idea of you just kind of slap paint on the classrooms every now and again. But it's, I think, a good example of what's happened in terms of the physical plant of the schools across the county, where some, there are some newly built schools, but even, for example, Northwestern High School that was rebuilt in the 2000s, significant overcrowding, and you're having other issues with the newer schools, but with the older schools, and I think it's been underreported, just the challenge of buildings that are outside that 50-year useful life span where you get into potentially lead issues.
So what would you do? Issues. So what would you do with it? With the High Points in Prince George's, because it's not the only old.
Unfortunately
school.
Not. Yeah. Unfortunately not. There's a lot of schools in that situation, and I think at the outset you have to get serious about making sure the schools are not, in any sense, providing an unhealthy environment for teachers, students, faculty, and staff. Making sure that if there was a mold issue reported, that it's truly remediated. Because if you get sort of a all clear, but then people are still saying that they're having trouble breathing or they're having issues, maybe it's not all clear. And maybe the solution isn't, well, just don't use that water fountain if there's a report of lead. I mean, we're coming across schools with enrollment in the hundreds with no working water fountain. Just think about that. In the largest and most affluent African-American majority county in the country, you have schools with enrollments in the hundreds with no working water fountain. And what
So are you saying that is the answer to improving the High Points and indeed the school system countywide just built new schools?
I mean, that's part of it. And it's not, you know, obviously there's a very complex scenario you have to work through in terms of the state government and what funding is available from Annapolis in terms of rebuilding schools. But High Point, even High Point under the current regime, was slated to be renovated in a couple of years. That has now been pushed back even further, I think 4 years last I saw. And so you have to get serious about repurposing funds to say we need to figure out how to put students in a healthy environment where they are able to learn and you're not dealing with these infrastructure issues that may be on some level poisoning people.
Okay. Carlos, thank you for your phone call. I've got about a minute or so before the break. What would you do with the current board? It's a hybrid right now. You've got appointed, you've got elected. Is that good or bad? What's your opinion on that?
So it's something that obviously a lot of folks are talking about. And when I was a student in the school, you know, we had a fully elected board. Then we went another direction with appointed and now the hybrid, as you say. That is something that I certainly believe in, the people having a voice over their elected officials and people that make rules for, you know, the broader society. But things like, I think, you know, the county executive being able to appoint the chair where there's a relationship there. You know, I think those are sort of clear red lines we should have in place where I cannot appoint someone who I'm related to chair the Board of Education. I think that's a basic rule that we should put in place as it pertains to the school board.
Would you keep the CEO if you were elected?
That's certainly something that we're continuing to look at. Obviously, the contract was renewed, so we've passed that point. Others have different views about whether he should stay or go.
But what do you think?
In a lot of things, I'm looking at dollars. We, in the sense of the county, has renewed this contract. The cost of buying out a person in their contract, I'm certainly committed to talking to more and more educators, people that are actually involved in and implicated by these decisions to see what their thoughts are. Because I can tell you over the course of the summer and talking to current and retired teachers and principals, what I continually hear is a desire for stability. Look at the number of superintendents we've had in this county in the last decade, and each with a different direction, a different vision. and where teachers in particular are usually on the receiving end of, this is the direction we're going in now. And the way that it's difficult, on top of the difficulty of the job anyway, the desire for stability so that they can actually plan and have some predictability to the environment that they're teaching in, that's something coming through loud and clear, but still looking at that.
Need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Paul Montero. He is a candidate for Prince George's County Executive. He's a Democrat. He's one of many in a very, very crowded field. Lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. When we come back, we're going to talk to Gloria in Clinton, Renee in District Heights, Steve in Maryland, and Tammy in Clinton as well. Lines are still open. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to your phone call. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The Quiet Storm, the original Quiet Storm, Jeff Brown, he's next. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Paul Montero tonight. He is a Democratic candidate for Prince George's County Executive. Of course, that seat currently held by Rashearn Baker. He is limited by term limits. He's also running for governor. So that's going to be an open seat next year. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tammy calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. My first question is, I am a county resident. I am also a product of Prince George's County Public Schools, but I send my children to schools outside of Prince George's County because the school system is just absolutely horrible. So when this gentleman talks about doing something different, I want to know exactly what different is. That's my first question. My second question is, what is his position on crime in the county? My third question is...
Tammy?
Oh, help. Hey.
Let's do two. What was that for? You wanted to know about the schools.
I want to know what is his plan for the public school system.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. No, thanks for the question, Tammy. And seriously, as we get tactical about what to do with the schools, we have to get to a place of destigmatizing alternatives to college. We're at a place now where there's almost a sense of, if you're not going to college, there's something wrong with you. You're not as smart. That's the furthest thing from the truth. Our students are just as smart as any kids in the world. And I firmly believe it's a responsibility of the school system to create meaningful pathways to career. And what I would do is look at what St. Louis has done. What St. Louis did after Mike Brown is illustrative, I think. After Michael Brown and the horrific incident of Ferguson, the school system there in the St. Louis, you know, Ferguson, Florissant area, reckoned that there are many other people that are not going to college. This school system has to provide a pathway for them to have a meaningful career and be able to live off a salary. So partnering with the Community College of St. Louis, the University of Missouri-St. Louis, and Washington University, the private university in St. Louis, they had Boeing. Boeing has a headquarters there in St. Louis as well. So at the end of the rainbow, Boeing's having some issues filling jobs, and these are not low-paying jobs. They can't fill the jobs that start at $80K, $85K, $90K. So working with the school system, they say, okay, we can, because we know early, if someone's not on the college track, let's identify them and say there's actually a specific job, not job training in a general sense. There's a specific job at Boeing that requires these skills, A, B, C, and Z. So you're going to be put into a dual enrollment track where you will only take classes in the morning at your high school, but then in the afternoons or evenings, you'll go to take A, B, C, and Z classes at the Community College of St. Louis or WashU, wherever those courses are offered. So at the end of that period, you have the specific qualifications that match the specific need that Boeing has. And over 18 months, without the debt of going to college for 4 years, you're in a job with you talk about living wage, you're making a healthy salary. And if St. Louis can do that with Boeing, think about all of the opportunities we have in this county. We have a federal footprint that other counties would kill for. Mm-hmm. IRS, ATF, NOAA's here, GSA's coming. You have several colleges, but think of the companies that are here in this area, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Honeywell, getting serious about building that other track for students? Because some of the county schools, to be clear, are doing very well. But I think we all know the schools that, and High Point's one of them, the schools that are not, and then look at the neighborhoods around them, that is one of the biggest problems that's happening around the country of you have concentrated poverty. You have a school system or a school that's not preparing kids for much past graduation. So you're graduating, but to what? And so getting serious about dual enrollment. We do it on some level in the county. We do it with the Culinary Hospitality Institute at Prince George's Community College. There's a Health Sciences Academy as well. We need to get serious. And when I say serious, it means not 400 kids. Mm-hmm. We're the second largest school system in the state. We have to get serious about those kids that are not going to college, either those career tracks or apprenticeships, vocational education. Look at the development market in this area. These
Let me.
Jobs.
I got to stop you because she had another question, and there are other folks on the line, and there are other things we need to get to. She talked about crime. I need to ask you about this week's headlines. The Department of Justice now looking into allegations of racial discrimination by the administration, Hank Sawinski's administration. What's your opinion about that?
So, yeah, and I've been tracking that case closely because the police department initially submitted a complaint to the program I used to run, the Community Relations Service at the Justice Department. That's one of the issues that we deal with often with police departments is the training materials, the idea that maybe the way that officers are being trained is part of an issue as it comes to policing certain communities. So that's a case I've been looking at closely. I mean, it is troubling when you see some of the screenshots, and I'm outside now, so I'm just a civilian reading the newspaper like everyone else, seeing some of the screenshots of the, you know, the
issues
suspect,
that they've had, yeah.
You know, that mm-hmm. always seems to be of a darker skin tone or have, and there's an Afro wig in some of the pictures. On top of the complaints of maybe promotions are not being assigned or allocated in a fair way, it is troubling because it started in February with 90 officers, and now I read it's up to 111 officers that are complaining about this. And efforts to mediate obviously proved unfruitful because now the Civil Rights Division is looking at it. It's definitely troubling. You know, in looking at the latest news around it, we certainly have to look at and my brother's a police officer in Landover Hills. I mean, just the challenges officers go through. I don't want to minimize that. But we saw it when at the Justice Department, for example, implicit bias training was made mandatory for all agents at the Justice Department, where some bristled at that. They saw that as sort of you're just telling me I'm racist training. That's what that is. But everyone has implicit bias. There's no value judgment and just getting smarter about the way that we train our officers who have a difficult job. A lot of the recommendations in the president's task force report on 21st century policing go to some of these things that should be done to make sure that there's a level playing field, that you're not aggravating a problem by the way that you train based on improper assumptions or just this is the way we've always trained.
Okay.
It's very concerning. And again, in a majority African-American county, departments and the government should reflect the county. I think last statistic I saw, it's about 43% African-American.
Okay. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Steve, calling from Maryland. Steve, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Charles, I wish you a lot of luck. I've been a PG County resident here for over 25 years. And lately, one thing that I don't hear any politicians talking about, but is on all of our minds is the proliferation of all these traffic enforcement cameras only in the black community. I've did my research, and like Temple Hills, for example, has over 130 traffic enforcement cameras. Annapolis has 3. How do they explain that?
Okay.
Yeah, no, thanks for the question, Steve. I think that's one of the biggest issues I saw at the Justice Department, too, is whenever there's a profit motive to the justice system, and you know, hate to keep talking about Ferguson tonight, but way before anyone, you know, in the mass media knew Ferguson, what you had was the city of Ferguson had a revenue level here, and then the city of Ferguson had a level of tax, you know, or the budget that was, you know, there was a delta. They actually had a shortfall that they had to make up, and the way they made that up was fines and fees, garbage citation, jaywalking, property violation, on and on and on. You had at some ridiculous point, you had, I think it was like 70% of the city had received some form of citation from the city government.
So do you think that speed cameras are more about profit and less about safety?
I think you have to remove any sense or any, even the optics of this is here to make money off the backs of people. When you have a profit motive in a system that's about public safety, it undermines trust in the system. This is what we saw in Ferguson. You're not giving me a ticket because I was doing something wrong. You're giving me a ticket because you have to make a certain quota. You have to raise a certain amount of money and or because of what it looked like. And it's the larger issue of, like, why do we have a bail bond industry in Prince George's County? In the richest black county in America, you have an industry that needs people to get locked up to make money.
Well, you could certainly argue that. And while, as you said, Prince George's is the wealthiest, predominantly African American municipality in the country, but it does have a crime issue. It's a significant
Absolutely.
Crime issue, and something that has been top of mind for many administrations pre Rashearn Baker, pre Jack Johnson, and on and on and on. So I'm not here to argue for or against it, but and I don't want to get too much farther down in the weeds. But what is your position about speed cameras? Should we have them? Are they necessary? Is Steve right? Do you think they should be removed? So many should be removed from minority communities in the county. What?
I think whatever speed cameras exist, there cannot be a profit motive in putting it in there, in the sense of there's a company that's getting paid based on the number of tickets. I think that whole schematic is wrong, because then there's an incentive to place cameras in parts of the county or anywhere where citizens will have a harder time contesting or challenging them. It's almost like a hidden tax on people. And there's a lot of hidden taxes going on around the county. Even the school system, back to the prior question, even if you don't have a child in the school system, there's a reason that maybe your property value is a little lower than the same house, the same property in another county, because folks are factoring in, if I move there, often they're saying I have to budget an extra $20,000 to put my child in private school. So that's sort of a hidden tax that also hinders, I think, property values that still haven't rebounded fully since the recession. But that's one of those hidden taxes. These speed cameras, where the payment scheme is, a company gets a cut. As opposed to a flat fee, it's the company wants a portion of the volume. Then you just want bigger volume because your cut gets bigger. And I think that sort of setup, you're asking for trouble. I don't think that's an appropriate way to do it.
Steve, thank you for your question. To your point about property values and hidden taxes, Prince George's has some of the highest property taxes in the state, if not, the highest property tax in the state. And yet, as you suggested, property values have not recovered as they have in Fairfax County after the Great Recession and the mortgage crisis. There are still people in Prince George's County that are struggling with foreclosures and the like. How do you fix that?
I think, there's no sort of one thing that you can do to deal with this very complicated problem. But again, going back to the piece about a lot of things do hinge on education, because the state of our school system is well known, I think. And some people, it may make it harder for a business to choose to relocate here because their employees are going to ask the question, do I have to budget that $20,000? When the education system isn't firing on all cylinders and providing opportunity for those other students that may not be going to college, you can't write those kids off. You're going to see those kids again. And in terms of no economic opportunity, that's where the restorative justice piece of my agenda comes in. If someone has committed a crime and paid their debt to society, there has to be a specific pathway back to community for them. And because unless you give them that, you're going to see them again and probably not in a good encounter. Or they'll turn to the shadow economy. My brother, caught his first charge at 18 and then his second one a couple years later. And just seeing the way that he initially wanted to do the right thing, but every door, including McDonald's, was shut in his face. And then he makes other decisions. Not making it right, it's the wrong decision, but giving people meaningful pathways. Once he got an apprenticeship in a plumber's union, that broke the cycle. That gave him a living salary to start. a different direction in his life. And that's what I see for so many people in this county. We have folks that are doing well and thriving, but we have whole communities that we sort of look past, like they're not part of Prince George's County too. And my simple point is that they are indeed absolutely part of our county, and they're our responsibility too.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Gloria in Clinton, Maryland. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Paul Montero. He is a Democratic candidate for Prince George's County Executive. We'll be back in just a moment. Harold Fisher, we continue our conversation with Paul Montero. He is a Democratic candidate for Prince George's County Executive. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gloria, calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. Thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. And
sure.
Thank you, Paul, for stepping up to be a candidate for our county executive. I will have to tell you, Harold, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was all geared up to vote and follow the name, Angela Alsobrooks. I went, and once I heard Paul was launching his candidacy and announcing it, I went to hear him speak. I did a little research on him, and Paul, I want you to know I'm full on. You have my vote.
Thank you so much, Gloria. We're not related, to be clear. This is not a plant. We're not related,
no,
Gloria.
It's
okay.
Not.
Just so people know.
I swear to you, it's not. I'll tell you, I'm Gloria Harrison. I'm Director of Public Affairs at the Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center, and that's the reason for my call, because what I did not have an opportunity to ask you about when I was there at your announcement is the largest population of veterans are in Prince George's County. And as Harold has mentioned already, with Donna Edwards looking at the opportunity seriously, it worries me a little bit for you because you're my candidate. And I know her. I know what she has done for the veteran community. And Prince George's County, as I said, has the largest number of veterans. So I need to understand and have you to help me understand what your plan is, and not your whole plan, just are you thinking about it, is it on your mind, and are you aware of it, that Veterans Court is an integral role in our community, that veterans and the mental health of veterans in our county, in this area, is important, and are you supporting the opportunity of putting funding behind veteran courts and expanding that opportunity for those who have served and having them to have alternative opportunities to this justice system?
Real brief, first of all, what is Veterans Court?
Veterans Court is an alternative opportunity for veterans, and it takes into consideration the mental state and what they have endured in the theater of battle.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Sure, and I definitely do support that. And in running this campaign, I'm never going to be unnecessarily critical. I give credit where credit's due, and I think you pointed out, you know, others have done a lot for veterans, and I do support Veterans Court. I think these alternative pathways, especially with the criminal justice system, you have to build these in, like Anne Arundel does with sort of drug courts, and we do as well. But you have to build in these alternatives to divert folks from just getting locked up. These are people that have given so much to the country. We owe it to them to provide pathways for them, again, to return to community and be supported. So I definitely do support veterans courts. And that's a troubling trend I saw when I was at the Justice Department, too. As much as we should track law enforcement-involved shootings of sort of racial groups, in particular African-American men, That increasing number of police-involved shootings involving veterans who were not supported in the sense of they were off their medication, PTSD, X, Y, and Z, and all the supports that should have caught them before had been disinvested in. And so someone sees someone on the corner with a broomstick, naked. They're scared. They call the police. The police show up on the scene, order people to put down whatever's in their hand, lay on the ground, noncompliance, fatal shooting. Mm-hmm. And that's a justified shooting, because the officer would not know that, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And so that number continues to creep up again because we've disinvested in a lot of these supports that should have been serving folks before it ever got to that point of 911 was the answer. Mm-hmm. That's not fair to the police officer. in some sense, right? So I do support, and I've been tracking this, obviously, because we're right outside the nation's capital. We have Andrews Air Force Base. We have a large military presence. I look also at veterans at the opportunity to mentor, especially when you're dealing with, and this is something I did at the White House on the My Brother's Keeper initiative with the mentoring program we ran, just the example and role model. When we took some of our young men in the program to Andrews Air Force Base to see Air Force One, you know, it's not just a plane. To these young men, that was everything. And then meeting men and a few women in the Air Force that work on the Air Force One complement that are from their neighborhoods, mind blown. And I think the veteran as a mentor is also a huge opportunity. But I agree with you, Gloria. We do need to invest in them in these services so they don't fall through the cracks. We owe it to them.
Okay. Gloria, thank you so much for your phone call. You may have, in some cases, some would say you may have a bit of an advantage with your, you know, political experience at the White House. But county executive, that office also requires relationships in Annapolis. How would you develop those? Because over the past 4 years or so, County Executive Baker has had some push and pull with Governor Hogan over money, the hospital, and a whole lot of things. That relationship has not always been pristine. So how do you do better with Annapolis?
Well, I think the initial answer would be the old-fashioned way. You have to invest time in these relationships. And again, I'm not saying, well, if I'm elected, I alone will be the one to get a great relationship with Annapolis and all will be well. There's so much talent in this county. And I know what I know. And 10 years serving at the highest levels of the federal government, I know what I know. But I also know, in the same breath, there are things I don't know. And there are people that have been doing this for many, many years. Again, going back to, I give credit to County Executive Baker for showing the way that he needed mentoring from Wayne Curry when he started in this job. I think anyone that comes in saying, well, I've had sufficient experience, let me just check the box, I'm good to go, I question that a bit. There's always more to learn. And there's no pride or ego in me to say, I don't need your help. I don't need to talk to you. There's so much talent in this county. There are people that love this place. There's a lot to be proud of about Prince George's County. And working hand in glove with people to develop a relationship with folks to go to bat for what we deserve as a county. The last thing I would say on this, though, is that we also need to have a voice and agency over our own. And what I mean by that is certainly we're a county that's part of a state. But the idea that certain people in Annapolis will call the shots about what we do in Prince George's County, I bristle a little bit at that. I think we should make our own destiny. We have to certainly play in the system that we are part of. We're not an independent country. But I think there's been too much of this sense of a couple of people in Annapolis will truly call the shots for Prince George's County. And I think it's time for us to scramble that a bit and reclaim our voice.
With that said, who's supporting you right now? Are there any individuals, prominent individuals, whether they are in elected office,
Gloria. So
I mean, yeah, well, there's Gloria. That's a start. I mean, you can't, you know, Gloria is at the front of the line. But I mean, are there any elected officials? Are there any other people who have publicly come out part of the Democratic machine for the state that begins choosing up sides when the hats are thrown in the ring?
The way I look at it, and to answer your question, there are several people that have endorsed, in terms of elected officials, less so, but folks like Cecilia Munoz, she was the head of the Domestic Policy Council at the White House, Ron Davis, who was the head of the Community-Oriented Policing Office at the Justice Department under the last administration. This Saturday, Bishop Alfred Owens of Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church, Prince George's County resident, will endorse me at his home in Woodmore with many other members of the clergy, my friend and mentor, C.T. Vivian, this is a civil rights icon in Atlanta, but somebody I've worked with for many years, has also endorsed me, given the vision I have for this county. And over time, again, I'm going hard at the 80% of Prince Georgians who no one's talking to, because these are the people that have to find it in themselves to say, you know what, I do want something different in this county, and I don't want to tear it down. I don't want to criticize it, but I have to be an honest critic and say, We should be doing better. If you can't figure some of these interventions out in this place, where can you figure it out? And so over time, You know, we're going after support in every corner we can find it. But I think for the elected officials in particular, those are the crowd that, in their mind, the election's done. They've already selected who's going to win. And that has a funny way of not working out all the time.
Yeah, well, we saw that in 2008, didn't we?
And
indeed we did. Let me go. Rob, calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling, Rob. What's on your mind?
Yes, Paul. Hey, congratulations on running, and you're doing an outstanding job from a presentation perspective.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You mentioned the word talent, and I appreciate it. It's a perfect transition to my question. Marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. To me, Prince George's County could use a good, fresh marketing campaign. The gorgeous Prince George's, that is so tired. And it's like there's so much unique talent in this county. Mm-hmm. I think a fresh marketing campaign would do this county awesome, would do some very good things for this county. How do you agree, first of all, and two, how do you look at enforcing or implementing a marketing campaign? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question, Rob. Yeah, I certainly agree. I think the we have the luxury of having a lot of good to tell. If we were some county in a rural place with no colleges, no federal agencies, I would understand it, but we don't have that excuse. If anything, as I travel, and I travel all the time, folks know Prince George's County, West Coast, Midwest, South, they know Prince George's County for a lot of reasons. Everyone from Jim Henson, the creator of the Muppets, from Prince George's County, Taraji P. Henson, from Prince George's County, one of the founders of Google, from Prince George's County.
He went to Eleanor Roosevelt. Yeah, he didn't go to High Point.
Raheem Devon went to High Point.
Okay.
Right. Raheem Devon.
Yeah. All right, there you
changed
go. We could talk about that all day, right?
Well, so, you know, there's some claims to fame, and so we have a lot of talent to sell. And so, yeah, that's why I agree, Rob, the idea that the slogan is a livable community or gorgeous Prince George's, it's sort of, well, it's not really tapping into our real talent, our people. Our people are what make this place a known county where, you know, folks usually don't know counties around the country, but we are known. So there's so much and so much good to tell in terms of our narrative. Sometimes, you know, the way the media works, if it bleeds, it leads, and people cover the negative and what's not going right. But to all the folks that live in the county, myself included, when I was working at the White House, a lot of folks were like, well, why don't you move to D.C.? You're driving to Maryland every day, you're not leaving until 10, 11 at night. Don't you want to just live closer? And I'm like, no, this is home. I'm going to stay where I know, and this is home. So we all, even if we criticize in a constructive way, we love this place. And there's so much good to tell. And I'm going to run a campaign that celebrates what we're about. I agree. It's a high-class problem to have so many things to choose from in terms of how do you tell the great story of Prince George's County. So thanks for the question.
Rob, thank you so much. Paul Montero running for Prince George's County Executive. Good luck to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, October 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night. The Howard University.